The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You have to be strong in today's world.
Strong.
Keep your focus and
up.
What you believe in, how to achieve all your dreams.
Hey.
Keep moving forward.
It's sponsored by Atlantis Paradise Island, the Ministry of Health, Cable Bahamas, Rev Christmas, ML Foods Limited, the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, Baha Retreat and Spa, and J.S. Johnson.
Wants to spread acts of kindness during this festive season. One simple act of kindness for our friends, co-workers, and communities can cause the brightest smile. Help a stranger, give a food basket, or call an elderly person. Share your stories at facebook.com/RBC Caribbean.
Acts of kindness, RBC.
Girl, you see how Cora eye look funny, all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn, and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence, and we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I line up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call or text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me getting out of this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them and the messages get on mix up before it leave your phone. So nobody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
Rev customers already get more channels, more sports, and more speed. Now, we're giving more Christmas with up to $250,000 in cash and prizes. Sign up or upgrade to Rev Trio to win prizes like rent and mortgage payments, trips to see your favorite sports teams, plus up to $20,000 in our Rev Cash Vault. Want to win more Christmas? Call 601-8992 today and ask for Rev Trio. Rev, you and us together.
We are working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this together.
Food security is a challenge for many. Now in a pandemic, many more are unsure of their next meal. Through their Feed 5000 program and a $20,000 donation, AML is working to ensure that everyone has a meal for the holidays, and they're inviting you to help. Now until December 17th, visit any Solomon's, Costrite, Fresh Market, or Domino's in Nassau or Freeport, and Exuma Markets in Georgetown to donate and help feed a family in need this Christmas. No amount is too small. Remember, we're all in this together.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live at Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options, and they set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there are no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number. They see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. It's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
And welcome to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black. We had some technical challenges. I don't know how my sister is able to navigate all of these things and still talk so intelligently. But of course, if you recognize Nahaja's voice, you know that this is not it. This is Robin Lyons sitting in the big seat and filling in for my sister and dear friend, the incomparable Nahaja Black. My apologies for earlier. I think we had some technical challenges, but I've gotten some assistance. They had to come help me out because I thought I was in and I was out, and I thought I was out and I was in. But anyway, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Hit Back. Thank you so much for joining us. So please, like and share the post and have a few more people join us on the conversation. Again, this is Robin Lyons filling in for Nahaja, and it's my pleasure and privilege to be with all of you today. We're going to talk a little bit about overcoming abuse. We started this conversation last week. Nahaja had a show and I was a guest. I think that was November 22nd. And we also were joined by Alicia Newton, and we started to talk about in this time when the world is really focusing on the eradication of gender-based violence, in this period of the 16 days of activism, we wanted to focus on having this most important and relevant conversation. And interestingly enough, as a country, we've been dealing with gender-based violence coming to the fore, violence against women, violence against our children coming to the fore. Thank you, Dayon. I appreciate you. He's been with me from we started, and I was in and out. So thank you for that. But, we've been talking about this, and it's interesting because it seems like as a society, that's what we do oftentimes when we have something that occurs, something that shocks us, something that shocks our conscience, we talk about it. We're passionate about it. We're enthused about it. We want action. And then our enthusiasm dies down. For some reason, we reach a point of exhaustion and we wait until the next issue, or we wait until something else occurs to make that discussion relevant again. And so what I wanted to do in today's show is to go back to that conversation that we've been having, because we can't expect different results if we continue to do things the same way. We can't expect to see our country move forward on pivotal issues. And today we're focusing on the eradication of gender-based violence. We can't expect our country to move forward if we just keep moving to something else. We have to stick with these issues until we address them in their entirety. And it's interesting because, and I want to share a timeline with you. I want to share some dates with you when I think the conversation about GBV reached to such a level in the nation that the government understood the gravity of addressing it and addressing it properly. I want to share this timeline with you because I think this is interesting. It was July of 2013, right? The government of the Bahamas launched the National GBV Task Force to oversee the development, implementation, and coordination of a national strategic plan to address gender-based violence. That was July 2013. That task force was led by co-chairs former Justice Ruby Nottage, Sandra Dane Patterson, and Dr. Robin Roberts. Fast forward to the 12th of August, 2015, the task force completed their report. It was signed off and it was presented to government and the cabinet at that time through Minister Melanie Griffin. Fast forward again, April 7th, 2016, there was a press release issued by the task force in conjunction with UN Women's Organization. And they wanted to assist us with the implementation of this strategic plan. So we went from 2013, we're now in 2016. And you can see that article about that in the Nassau Guardian. Nothing happened. August 4th, 2016, there was a presentation of the overall projected cost of the implementation of these national strategies, including legislative strategies, policies, programs, et cetera, that could cover all of the challenges that this task force had identified in our country. The overall cost of the implementation, it was budgeted at $8,994,327, right down to the dollar. And this was the cost over an entire six-year period. So you can divide that by six and you would know what the annual budget would have been. And that's not a lot to deal with something as serious as GBV. And I think that there was some monies that were budgeted in the March allocation for the Ministry of Social Services, March 2017. And those plans were supposed to start to roll out that strategic, national strategic implementation. Of course, we had elections on May 10th of 2017, and the government changed. The FNM won the majority. And I think that after that, there was a letter sent to the then Minister, Lanisha Roll, on the 31st of September 2017, about the work of the task force, about the budget allocation for that year, about the strategic plan, the implementation, what needed to be done. It went cold. Nothing happened, right? The 23rd of April, 2018, Justice Ruby Nottage, she sent a memorandum to the Ministry of Social Services about the establishment of a family court system. That kind of went cold. And there were some discussions around that, but nothing never happened or materialized. August 21st, 2018, another memorandum was sent by former Justice Ruby Nottage about the establishment of a GBV authority. And this authority would oversee the implementation of the strategic plan. That went cold. Nothing happened. We're now in 2021. And all of that work that had been done from 2013 to now is still just work. And that is what we have to prevent. How do we stop that? How do we stop using our human resources, our talented people, the best of our thinkers and those with the brilliance to address these matters, bringing all of themselves, putting together a document, a strategic report that is so comprehensive and so well done, going through all of the necessary procedures and channels, and nothing happens. And so what we're talking about today is, can we do more? We're talking about overcoming abuse, but can we do more? Can we do more as a people? Can we do more as a nation? Can we do more to herald and echo and advocate to say, you know what, enough talking, enough planning, enough committees, enough reports, enough writing, enough suggestions. When are we going to do what is necessary? When are we going to do what we need to do? And that is what I want to talk a little bit about today. And that's why I wanted to share that timeline with you. I wanted to share that timeline with you because I wanted you to see for yourself on this one issue how far we have come, but how little has been done. And I'm gonna bring in our guests, and I hope Reverend Patrick Paul is somewhere in the background in the studio and ready to join us soon. David Williams is gonna be joining us soon too. So I'm gonna have two male guests talking about GBV, and I think that was important. That's gonna be different. But you know, as we look at these things, as we look at how much, like I said, has been done and the work that was put into it, for there to be very little action, very, very little achievables. How do we stop that? How do we ensure that we move forward? That's the thing. How do we ensure that we move forward? And so I want you that are listening, whether that's by radio, whether you're listening by YouTube, whether you're following the show via Facebook, I want you to chime in so that we can have a conversation, so that we can have a discussion and lend your voice to this important issue. What do you think? And if you have a story to share, share it. If you have something, I feel like Prophet Roll just now is channeling me in a Prophet Roll. If you have a story, share it. But this is the only way that we're going to move from talk to action. If we don't allow ourselves to be exhausted, if we don't allow ourselves to talk a little and then talk again only when something happens. And so if you are joining us via YouTube, please, I'm going to be sharing some of the text messages that you send. So please comment. If you're joining us via Facebook, do the same thing. You can call in live. The numbers are shooting across the screen. All right, 325-4259 or text 422-4796. Another number that you can call in live, it's 323-6232 or 325-4316. And so I believe one of our guests are here, Mr. David Williams. And so we're going to invite Mr. David Williams to join me in studio just before we go to the break. I believe he's here. I'm going to see if I can add him to the stream and watch me trying to get technical now. I'm not sure if he too is having some technical challenges, but he was supposed to be joining me on the stream. And I think Mr. Williams has an important contribution as well to make to this conversation. He's the founder and president of Uplifting Men, the Uplifting Men's Ministry. And he's also a board member of the Men's Prison Ministry. And Mr. Williams has dealt with and continues to deal with a lot of men who have been perpetrators of domestic violence and gender-based violence against women and girls. And he focuses on reformative measures, focuses on trying to address the underlying causes of their actions and their behavior. So I'm really, really excited to talk to him about some of the work that he has done and looking at it from perhaps a different perspective. And then also joining me is Reverend Patrick Paul. And Reverend Paul, as many of you may know, he is the former president of the Bahamas Christian Council. And he's also now the chief superintendent of the Assemblies of God of the Bahamas. And I wanted Reverend Paul to join this discussion to talk a little bit about his experience being a pastor and someone who has counseled so many people dealing with domestic violence, some of his experience and what he has had to address, and any advice and words of wisdom and knowledge that he could share. But I also wanted him to talk as well about this, whether it's a misconception or perhaps in some cases a justifiable suggestion that a lot of persons, particularly women or predominantly women, are encouraged to stay, encouraged by the church to stay in relationships that they really should not be in. Looking at the sanctity of marriage, looking at the religious construct of marriage. And so I wanted him to unpack that a little bit and talk about that to address that. Is that the case? Are people being encouraged by the church? Is that a justifiable position for us to take? And so that he could address that and give us some advice and some feedback. All right. So I'm going to get some technical assistance in bringing our guests into the studio. First, Reverend Patrick Paul, and then David Williams. But again, like I said, please feel free to text and chat. So we'll go to a break. And as soon as we get back, we'll have our guests and we'll continue this conversation. So stick and stay, like and share.
Spread acts of kindness during this festive season. One simple act of kindness for our friends, co-workers, and communities can cause the brightest smile. Help a stranger, give a food basket, or call an elderly person. Share your stories at facebook.com/RBC Caribbean.
Acts of kindness, RBC.
Rev customers already get more channels, more sports, and more speed. Now, we're giving more Christmas with up to $250,000 in cash and prizes. Sign up or upgrade to Rev Trio to win prizes like rent and mortgage payments, trips to see your favorite sports teams, plus up to $20,000 in our Rev Cash Vault. Want to win more Christmas? Call 601-8992 today and ask for Rev Trio. Rev, you and us together.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live. At Cancer Treatment Centers of America, within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options, and they set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there are no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number. They see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. It's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
COVID-19 doesn't take holidays off, and neither should you. We can celebrate the holiday season while continuing to follow all public health protocols and regulations. We must also remember to wash our hands and sanitize frequently. Wear our masks, cough and sneeze into our elbows, disinfect items brought into our homes, stay at least 3 feet away from others in public, and remain at home when we're feeling unwell. Let's have a happy and healthy holiday.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
It's the Hit Back, hey, with Nahasha Black. Hey. It's the Hit Back, hey, with Nahasha Black. Hey. It's the Hit Back, hey, with Nahasha Black. Hey. It's the Hit Back, hey, with Nahasha Black.
Hey. Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, and welcome back to the Hit Back. Without Nahasha Black, I don't even know how I feel about it. But thank you guys so much for joining us. Those of you watching and listening via Facebook, via YouTube, this is Robin Lines filling in for my good sister and friend, Nahasha Black. And today we're continuing our discussion. This is part two of the show we did last week, Overcoming Abuse. Can we do more? So if you're watching, please like and share, comment, because we want you to be a part of the discussion. It's really not a discussion if you don't participate. So please send your comments via Facebook, send your comments via YouTube, or call in 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or you can text 422-4796. And as I mentioned on the other side of the break, I have Reverend Patrick Paul with me today to talk about overcoming abuse and to share some of his experiences as a pastor, as a leader, as someone who has had to counsel so many people. And we want to talk a little bit about what can we do from the church perspective. Has the church done enough when it comes to the eradication of gender-based violence, domestic violence, and these issues that continue to plague us as a nation? And so please help me welcome Reverend Pat Paul.
Robin, what an honor for me to share with you this afternoon, and of course with our Bahamian audience. It's always good to be on the show, especially with yourself or Nahaja. It is an honor for us. And so we're delighted to be a part of the conversation. We are part of the texture of the Bahamian culture, and therefore we want to add what we can to assist with respect to our development.
Thank you so much for joining me, Reverend Paul. It's a pleasure to be here, and I got to throw a little plug and let people know we family. And so I love you different. And so it's really good to have you. It's really good to have you. And of course, we've had a discussion, so you know what we want to talk about. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, as a nation, whatever makes the news, whatever is moving on social media, whatever seems to be the topic of discussion of the day, of the week, of the month, you know, we're all into it. We're passionate about it. We have the utmost zeal, and then it fizzles. But these are matters of national importance. These are matters that are affecting Bahamian lives, and domestic violence, gender-based violence, is one of those major issues that is affecting and plaguing us. It's definitely a social ill in our country. Tell me a little bit about your experience as a pastor. What have you seen?
Well, of course, I will tell you, I've seen so many different scenarios with regard to abuse from a husband and wife, children, in-laws. There is a whole garment of abuse that I would have counseled and seek to help persons to move from one part of the spectrum to the other, and to help them to overcome. Unfortunately, violence is a part of the human, I suppose, social fabric, and I haven't missed saying that because it is. It's unfortunate, but it is. And so with regard to who we are as a people, and that's a part of what we would have grown up with. In particular, I remember one with respect to both an assistant pastor and his wife, of course, and they had some challenges that we had to work through. But primarily what we find out and what we have found out over these years is the fact that a lot of what happened has to do with our culture. It's mm-hmm. what we were thought or what we believe, and it's outside of what the scripture teaches. And so the bridge that needs to be built is a transformational bridge, that where we move from what our culture teach us to what the scripture teach us. And so with respect to that, you have to counsel the immediate challenge and problem, and then you have to counsel with the person, or even, as I would have mentioned, even a local pastor, you have to counsel him. And so with regard to us moving on, or with us developing, there is a whole structural thing that we have to deal with.
Thank you, Rev. I wanna share a comment, because I think it's a great segue into the question that I want to ask. And this comment is from Cindy Godet via Facebook. She says, "I personally know and was close friends with two women who were told by church leaders not to leave their abusive husbands. They were told to pray for them instead. She said, myself and another friend had to literally help one of those women to go into hiding because her husband was threatening to kill her. The church refused to help her. They actually ostracized her instead." What are your thoughts on that comment?
That is very, very, very unfortunate. Robin, is extremely unfortunate, is because as it relates to the church is supposed to be a means or a shelter. The church is a entity that Christ has erected and constructed to help persons to move from what we call saving grace to deliverance grace. Saving grace to empowering persons and people to live. And so what she has mentioned is very, very unfortunate, is because it's the church should be the first one to come to the rescue of anybody, no matter who it is. It is the church to first deal with that. And then, of course, there are ways in dealing with what we call phase one, phase two, phase three, and phase four before you make an actual decision. These persons go through regular means of counseling. And so there's a counseling we call 101, counseling 102, counseling 103, and then counseling 104 before there is a decision made. And both persons needs to be counseled with respect to the challenges that they face. So it's very, very unfortunate that that church would have encouraged a woman to stay in an abusive situation.
So what would you say to that, that is not a situation that she should even remain in? Is that what you're, because we have to be direct, and I want people to hear what it is that you are saying, because I think it's important. It's important what you're saying. And even when we talk about counseling, when we talk about counseling from the perspective of the church, really and truly, you know, we don't have any mandatory requirements for someone to enter into pastoralship. We don't have any mandatory requirements for someone to lead a church. You know, you get ordained, you open a church. So, you know, when we look at that in context, unfortunately, in some cases, you have a lot of people who are counseling persons who are not qualified to do it. Who have no training, who have no understanding, and they are offering advice as a spiritual authority, and really and truly they're not qualified. And I think that is a challenge that a lot of people have as well.
There is no question, and it's again unfortunate. We have morphed as a religious group and as a Christian nation, so to speak. We have developed into a society that does not reflect biblical principles. While we go under the banner of a Christian society, we do not reflect the quality and the virtue of what the scripture teaches. And that is, again, very, very unfortunate. And so what we have is the scripture, because, Robin, it's very simple in light and in view that the God is sovereign within his nature, and in so doing, it is sovereign with respect then to the church. However, with regard to laws of the land, the laws of the land has to put in place certain things to protect society. And that's where we need to develop as a people. May I just, something comes to mind that we did some studies years and years ago of one of the great leaders in the 16th century by the name of Wilberforce. Wilberforce was born into a very, very rich family. Of course, in Britain, but he was the grandson of this multi-millionaire, and mm-hmm. of course, back in the day, in order to function as a parliamentarian, you had to own businesses and you had to be a millionaire or you had to be rich. His grandfather died, and he was 16 years old, and so he could not enter parliament because, if I remember correctly, to be a parliamentarian you had to be at least age 21. And so his grandfather once owned slaves, mm-hmm. but he pitied the slave and wanted to help them to be free. And so when his grandfather died, he was unable to participate within parliament. And so he had to wait until he was 21. In the meanwhile, he built what it's called societies. He added to his property a building by which he entered a particular society. The next year, he entered a second society. By the time he was 21, he had four societies built, office space built on his grounds. And he worked and worked and never obtained, never got elected until he was about 26 years old. So it was like 10 years later. When he was elected, it took him another 12 years before his resolution was passed. But in the meanwhile, he was constantly building these various societies. And so when his resolution passed to free the slaves, these societies that he built over the last 12, 15 years, they automatically was able then to have footing to be able to hold what his resolution produced. And so in our society, we need laws, but we need the societal groups which would be able to sustain those things by what is passed. So when you can talk about the laws that was basically dealt with, and you talk about a numerous of them, 2016 or 2015.
Yeah, the long walk to the GBV legislation that we still don't have, and so many other policies. Yes, yes.
Exactly. So what needs to happen is we need a societal institutions or societal institutional to be able to hold up what the laws are going to say. Other than that, they will constantly fall to the ground. Constantly fall to the ground. And so we need persons and people who understand if we're going to be able to sustain these things that we are vying for, we need to have a background, we need to have a societal posture, we need to have a group of persons, a group of people in society that is willing to sustain those laws that are passed.
Yeah, that's interesting, Rev. You know, for me, and you know, I grew up in church, I've been in church all my life. And I know that whilst we are not a society that subscribes to the statutes and the precepts of the Word of God as we should, we have a knowledge and an understanding of God. And for many people, the church is their first port of call. Something happens, you go into the pastor, whether that's for prayer, whether that is for counseling, whether that's for someone to talk to, whether that's someone to lean on, you go to the church. What we have to ensure is that when people come to the church, when they come to the church, that now that we understand the challenges that we face, there may have to be imposed regulations on who can offer counseling in certain areas, mandatory trainings, or at the very least, certification courses, so that, see, because there is a spiritual side and understanding the wisdom and the knowledge of God, I understand that. But there are also some practicalities that people have to see and know, because the battered woman, the battered man, the child that's being abused, in many instances, there's a very long journey, a very long walk to coming out of the circumstances that you face. If you're not working, if you don't have anywhere to live, and I understand fully, and I have the full grasp of what you're saying, and it's true, building social structures that support the law, support the legislation. And like I said, making sure that when people come to the church is uniformed in its understanding of the kind of help that people need to get. Because many people will share stories of being told, you know, this man paying the bills. You know, you have a nice home. Yeah, you know, he has a little temper, but you know, pray for him. Stick and stay. Don't go nowhere. And there are thousands of people with these stories, with this kind of reality. And, you know, it has really been to the detriment of the strength of the church in this area. And so we have to be able to ensure that when a person calls on a pastor, calls on a spiritual leader for advice, that that individual is able and capable of offering that advice. And I'm not suggesting that the state starts to regulate the church, But at the very least, when you have, you know, even with you, with marriage licenses, even with a JP license, there's a particular cost, there's certain qualifications, you know, maybe the issuance of counseling license to pastors, to leaders, to ensure that you have at the very least met some requirements and you understand that, you know, we cannot have people feeling as though they're trapped. We cannot have people feeling as though if they make a decision for themselves, for their children to walk away, that is outside of the will of God. Because he said, I want you to prosper and be in good health even as your soul prospers. And I'm an advocate for marriage, but I'm an advocate for survival. I'm an advocate for people being living healthy, living happy, living godly lives. And so I'm glad that, you know, you're here and we're able to have that conversation. I want to share a comment from Facebook. This is Simone Duncombe, and she said, "How can a woman be helped when her abuser or husband is the sole provider? Are there organizations that can bridge the gap for a woman to move on and be positioned to provide for herself and possibly her children?" And she went on to say, a lot of persons speak about abuse being swept under the rug when it reaches, and I mentioned that interestingly enough, when it reaches the pastoral level, should pastors and counselors have to swear by oath to have abusers reported for prosecution? What's your thoughts on that? The way, for instance, doctors, teachers, you know, the Child Protection Act actually makes it mandatory for the reporting of abuse where there is the knowledge of abuse or even the suspicion of abuse. Do you think that that is something that should be imposed on counselors, church counselors?
First of all, I'm not out for the government to regulate the church. However, the church and government need to work together because there are steps that are necessary and there are minor things that are done from time to time by which can easily be taken care of. So we don't want to then confuse the minor issues with the major issues. And that's real. How to determine that, it's one way or the other. However, with regard to abuse, all abuse should be able to be accounted for. They're just like everything else that, as you would have mentioned, the doctors sign an oath, et cetera, et cetera. And what we do not want to omit is you have the good and you're going to have the bad and you're going to have the ugly that exists. Mm-hmm. And that's why we need regulation to some degree to ensure that we have a healthy society. We were just in London the other day, I suppose a month ago, give and take maybe a little more. And we were talking with some teachers, all of them with master's degree and PhD, et cetera. And some of them has moved on from teaching and now has become counselor and defenders and so on and so forth for the less fortunate. But in the law, in British laws, that whenever a young person is arrested, or whatever, the first thing has to happen is they have to have a counselor. And Britain has a group of counselors that lend themselves to ensure that that person is taken care of. And so likewise for us as a society, as a development society and a development nation, we need to begin to put these things in place because all humans are important. All people are important. Absolutely. And in relation to a woman, a young lady, or a child being abused, we should have facilities that facilitate, even if it's 24 hours, 72 hours a week, or whatever, where that child can have a safe space to properly kind of regain themselves, et cetera, et cetera. And so to me, Robin, these things need to begin to develop from a legislation perspective. And out of that, then the government, the government work hand in hand with the churches so that the pastors, the bishops, et cetera, can help to formulate such laws to be able to be palatable both to society and indeed for what the legal structure says. And in that, we could marry a means to facilitate and to help our society to grow and to develop and to minimize this abuse that we have in our society.
Absolutely. Is the church advocating enough, Reverend Paul? Is the church talking enough? Because, you know, as we said, you have scores of people seeking counseling, seeking assistance. I know at the church that I attend, and even at my office, because of where it is, you know, and the nonprofit work that I do, people are always looking for assistance, looking for food, looking for advice, looking for legal assistance, and you know, dealing with matters such as this. Is the church advocating enough for and calling for the legislation and policies and the programs that are needed, shedding light on what it faces, what it has to deal with? Do you think there's enough advocacy by the church? And I want you to hold that thought, Rev, because we have to go to another break. We got to pay the bills. We got to keep the radio on. So right after this break, we'll be right back.
COVID-19 doesn't take holidays off, and neither should you. We can celebrate the holiday season while continuing to follow all public health protocols and regulations. We must also remember to wash our hands and sanitize frequently. Wear our masks, cough and sneeze into our elbows, disinfect items brought into our homes, stay at least 3 feet away from others in public, and remain at home when we're feeling unwell. Let's have a happy and healthy holiday.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Rejuvenate. Refresh. Treat yourself. Immerse yourself in total comfort. Pamper yourself. After all, you're worth it. Relax. Rid yourself of all life stresses. At Baja Retreat Anti-Aging Spa, you will find everything you need to enhance your body and spirit. Call today at 323-6711 and begin your journey to serenity at Baja Retreat Anti-Aging Spa.
Ben, why are you so nervous about getting the COVID-19 vaccine?
I don't know. I've been hearing the doctors, seeing things on social media. One article say this, one story say that, and I don't think I know enough about the vaccine.
Okay, let me help you out. Vaccinated people are less likely to get seriously ill from COVID-19, less likely to be admitted to hospital, and less likely to die from COVID-19.
Kelly, I don't want to end up in hospital.
Ben, the vaccine even provides protection against the new variants of COVID-19, and that's good news.
Kelly, I like how you put it. Thanks. You could help me make my COVID-19 vaccine appointment, please?
Definitely. Don't procrastinate. Vaccinate.
This message has been brought to you by the Ministry of Health and this radio station.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live. At Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options, and they set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there are no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number, they see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. It's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
It's the Hit Back, hey. With Nahasha Black. Hey. It's the Hit Back, hey. With Nahasha Black. Hey. It's the Hit Back, hey. With Nahasha Black. Hey. It's the Hit Back, hey. With Nahasha Black.
Hey. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for sticking with us and joining us today. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahasha Black on Guardian Radio. with your special guest host for today, Robin Lines. And I'm joined in studio by Reverend Patrick Paul, and we're going to introduce Mr. David Williams on the other side of the break. Rev, you still there? You still with me?
I'm still with you. I'm still with you. I'll be with you until it's time.
Thank you, Rev. When we took that break, the question that I asked was the advocacy of the church. Is the church talking sufficiently about what it is experiencing from the standpoint of demand and the problems that needs to be addressed, particularly in relation to domestic violence, gender-based violence, violence in general? Is the church collectively advocating sufficiently to raise this awareness? What are your thoughts on that?
Of course, we can do so much more to advocate. We can do so much more to assist. And we can do so much more as a church. There is no question that in some areas the church is a little quiet. And we need to raise our voice. We need to raise our support against gender-based violence, et cetera, et cetera. And I believed primarily we've been talking today as Christian leaders and the rest of that. I believe that in short order, you're going to be seeing some changes. But there's no question, as a church, we need to say so much more. We need to do, we can do some more. And I believe in a short while, you will be hearing a little bit more from the church. We'll kind of go back to what we used to be some almost two or three decades ago.
It's time. It's time. And you know, like I said, we have over 1,000 churches in this country in a population of under 400,000 people. So the presence of the church, and when I say in this country, that's a miss. I really should have said in Nassau. In the entire Bahamas, I kind of lose in count. But two things we have on almost every corner now, three things now. We got the church, we got the barn, we got the number house. And so, you know, we have the presence of the church very strong. And there's still a lot of respect and reverence for the spiritual authority of the church being the moral compass of our society. And when we start to talk about these things, the voice of the church, whether that is for or against, is a voice that is extremely relevant. And I think that the church needs to make sure that when it stands for righteousness, it stands for what is just, and it ensures that it stands for people, because that's God's law. He will always put people first. And so I'm so grateful for us having this private chat. I want to add now Mr. Williams into the chat, Rev, to talk a little bit about the work that he's doing, uplifting men's ministries and looking at it from the standpoint of the abuser and the work that he has done and some of the experiences that he's had as we continue with the conversation. So welcome, Mr. Williams. Are you good?
I just want to say thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
I sat there, I listened to Reverend Paul. I'm familiar with him. I'm familiar more with his wife, you know, having done a number of projects together, and she was a part of a number of programs that I were part of. So I just want to say good evening to those of you in the Bahamas listening in.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And I have to say to our listening audience that, you know, our conversation was very, very short notice. And you were so gracious to and willing to accept this invitation. So thank you for that. Thank you for being willing to talk a little bit about what you do and why your work is important. Now, you're the founder and president of Uplifting Men's Ministry. Tell us a little bit about what Uplifting Men's Ministry does in the area of gender-based violence and domestic violence, and why you think that work was important for you to begin.
Okay, first I'd say when I initially founded Uplifting Men's Ministry, which was actually launched in 2011 in Kenya, I went to Kenya on some missionary work. And the same time, I remember going to Pastor Miles Monroe, who I did not know as well. He gave me some information and I launched Uplifting Men's Ministry. When I came back, I went to ZNES I got permission and I had a national radio broadcast where I talked about issues facing men. How can we help and support them? And having been involved in ministry in the prison for the past 20 years, I connected with Dr. Robin Roberts as part of a Carry Man training, which talked about gender-based violence, sexual violence prevention. And so out of that experience, I connected with the Department of Gender and Family Affairs. And as a result of that, Dr. Higgs invited me to CARICOM, some training in Trinidad and Jamaica, IDB training, as well as part of the Citizen Security and Justice Program led by Dr. Lightburne. So that's how I really got involved in gender-based violence and sexual violence prevention. And so out of that experience, because I was already in the prison for many years doing ministry, it was noticed or it was recommended that there's not a specific program, as far as I could recall, somebody left to correct me, that specifically dealt with gender-based violence, sexual violence prevention at the Department of Corrections. The former minister, Frankie Campbell of Social Services, he shared this program with Dr. Jacinta Higgs, former director. She then contacted myself as a result of some training. She and I went to a male masculinity program in, I think it was Jamaica. And so we spoke with Henry Johnson, who was the coordinator of the males there, now is. And as a result of it, myself and a lady by the name of Kendra Bow, rite of passage, we had the first program which was specifically tailored for men, sexual abusers, men at the Department of Corrections. Now, I was not aware then that the program had 25 men, and they were men who specifically identified as committing violence against women and girls. Until later on in the class, when one of the gentlemen said to me, he said, boy, excuse my term, Bayman term. He said, boy, you all realize all of us in here charged with some abused woman, beaten woman, or some violence against women, you know, and we smile. But the point is, and so we began this program, which we got about 80% through. We did a pre-test, and we would have concluded with a post-test, but the coronavirus came, and we were not able to conclude it. But the program talked about some of the things like the myths of rape. It talked about three types of rape, the marital rape, the stranger rape, the date rape, right? We also talked a little about, we tried to find out what are some of the causes in regard to some of these men. And there's three things that came up that I need to mention on this national TV. There were three things we discovered. One, we discovered that a number of those men, I'm talking about them who were in those classes, and this came from them, literally they said this. They said that they saw violence themselves in their home from the early stage of their life. That's one. Two, we also recognize that the majority of them grew up without a father in the home. The third point we also discovered, which took a while for them to bring it out, some of these men actually was able to admit that they themselves were abused, right? Including one or two of the men actually said that they lost their virginity to women at a young age, right? And right. So one of the things we also discovered from some of these men also is that drugs, alcohol was a great influence at the time they commit their crime, which was the violence against the women, the girls. But I want to go off just for a minute to say, you know, I spoke at Zonta Club just Saturday past. I spoke at the Zonta Club. And one of the things is that while our focus, because we're looking at the 16 days of activism, right, against the violence against women and girls, but I told Zonta, I said, we must also have a passion for our young men because we're losing our young men. I was in your community where you grew up in Milton Street, myself and Dr. Carlos Reed, a number of us, and what we call a violence interrupters or intervention program. And I went in East Street, I went in Mason's Edition, and in a number of communities, right? So I just want to put it out there that while we want to focus on our women and our girls, don't forget our young men, because they are our brothers, our uncles, our sons. You know, I mean, if you look at it, right, so we also need to highlight more of our men. But getting back to our topic, as we talk about the sexual violence. One of the things we talked about, Kendra and I, we also shared some practical skills in terms of anger management, conflict resolution, solution for peace. Because one of the things we want to do is, and I've said this too, I said this last week when I spoke on downtown, the march that they had, is that we also want these men, we want our boys to be equipped with information so that when they find themselves in a situation, they would have some tools in terms of how do they respond to these various conflicts, right? Unless one of the things I need to say on national radio and TV too is that I know persons also say, well, you know, you're always in the prison. You always talk about the prison. What about preventing before? So I just want to say, Kendra and I also took this program earlier this year at the Simpson Penn and the William A. Pratt School, where we had a conversation with the boys, with the girls on gender-based violence, sexual violence prevention. What could you do to protect yourself in terms of the myths of rape? We also talked about, and this is something we don't talk about much, the risk factors. Because once one talk about the risk factors, then people generally tend to say, well, you know, I could do what I want to do. I could go where I want to go. I could, you know, live my life as I please. And we always talk about, yes, you could do whatever you want, but there are certain risk factors. Example, I, as a male, don't want to walk in certain communities 9, 10, 11, 12 o'clock in the night, even though I grew up in the inner city, right? So the same thing we shared with women, right? You want to avoid a number of risk factors. But when we talk about gender-based violence, sexual violence prevention, and abuse, and last week on my show, I had three ladies on, and I'll continue with part two, who were sexually abused as children, with one acknowledging and admitting that she had a child for her abuser, you know, and that was, I listened to them last week downtown. And when I heard that, I was so moved, I invited the three of these young ladies to be a part of the show. But the point is, we want to get a message across to men that, and as a Christian too, we want to get a message across to them that we all are created in the image of God. And God, while we all have different functions, but we are all equal in the sight of God. And so we ought to respect our women. We ought to respect our girls. We ought to respect even persons who are not of the Christian faith, right? We may not agree with lifestyle. Example, persons who live a lesbian and transgender and homosexual lifestyle. We may not agree with it, but we ought to still respect, because these would lead to physical abuse against individuals because of the fact that they are different from me, or I don't agree with their lifestyle. And so the same thing when we talk about this, perpetrating this violence, right? And this is why, and let me tell you one thing this has done for me. I was not always like this, again, I say, but at this stage of my life, if I'm sitting around a basketball court or I'm in a space, I am bold enough now listening to men share the negative, right? I'll say to them, hey, no, I can't agree with you. I can't support you with, boy, I'll slap her. I'll beat her down. No, I say, I am bold enough to get up in that space and say, hey, no, I don't agree with this. I can't support this. I can't sit here and allow you to say this, right? And so I'm thinking that as men, we talk about better relationship between men and women. So I'm saying we as men need to be more bold, right? I think what has happened is sometimes as men, because of this macho image, and we want to be seen, right? So, or we don't want to be different, right? So we even though we don't agree with it, but we sit down and we allow other men, other boys to talk these negative things about our women, about our girls, without being bold enough to say, hey, I don't agree with this. My parents didn't teach me this, or my daddy didn't teach me that. And so this is a part of the education cycle, I think, that as we continue to educate our boys, as we continue to educate our men about taking a bold stand and say, hey, no, I don't support no violence. I don't support violence in general, but in particular against our women and girls, because they tend to be the weaker vessel. I don't support this, and I can't agree with it, and I can't sit here in silence and allow you men to have a conversation with negative things against our women and girls.
I want to ask you, Mr. Williams, because a lot of times when we start to talk about this, people think that and gender-based violence is to a certain degree gender biased. gender bias. When I say gender bias, I mean focusing on women and girls, but not because there's a failure to acknowledge that our men and our boys are also victims of intimate partner violence, victims of domestic abuse, but there's a disproportionate amount of those survivors and victims who are women. And the statistics, the numbers suggest that that is just the reality, that when you look at the reports, when you look at the complaints, when you look at the instances of police intervention, family intervention, when you look at the stats across the board, women and girls account for the vast majority of the survivors, of the victims. But people tend to feel as though this conversation is isolating or alienating our men, and it's not. You know, there has been a lot of work to bring men to the point where they can even talk about their abuse, because consider the male psyche and this reality, and you can chime in on this as well, Reverend Paul, to come in and say, listen, I want to report my girlfriend. She punched me. She slapped me. She trying to fight me. There are a lot of men who wouldn't even do that. And so whilst intimate partner violence, domestic violence, these types of offenses are underreported in its entirety, just imagine the challenge that we have for men saying that they are victims of intimate partner violence, domestic violence, whether or not that is perpetrated by a female partner, a male partner, or other. And so I want to talk about whether your program has addressed this need for men to come forward, for men to talk about the abuse that they too have faced, and being able to get the help that they need. And I want to also mention, before you get to your comment, I'll go to you first, Mr. Williams, and then Pastor Paul to deal with that. To take note that the women, the Bureau of Women's Affairs in the Department of Social Services was changed to the Department of Gender and Family Affairs as part of the strategic national plan to eradicate violence, gender-based violence, understanding that it wasn't just about women and girls, it was about anyone who was facing violence. And so that's something that we want to take note of. And I saw in one of the comments, someone said, you know, you have shelters for women, but you have no shelters for men. The truth of the matter is, I'm not aware, and I practiced family law for the past 13 years. I've dealt with a lot of these matters, a lot of these instances, and I'm not aware of the numbers of men who have complained warranting a facility that they need. And I could be wrong, and that's why I love this kind of interaction from our listening audience. But talk to us about that for a minute or two, Mr. Williams. How do we get more men to talk about their abuse, to talk maybe about the genesis, the origin of how they came to be abusers themselves? How do we cross that and really push back that culture, that male, that machoism, if I can say that? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I would say, and because of sometimes the space or the environment I'm in, where I've heard in one or two cases, while it's a very small minority, where men have talked about going to the station and being laughed out of the station. As a matter of fact, in one of my training sessions, someone came and shared about it. So the point is, I think one way to get more men to talk about it is to have the police officers, those in authority, because when men can walk into station and say he was abused, and in most cases, even if it is not necessarily physically abused, right, and officers laugh at them and run them out of the station. So you can imagine, if he only talking about from a mental or emotional perspective, imagine if he walk in a station and say he's physically abused. Now, even though I'm on the show and I'm talking, but I honestly can say to our audience, if I was to get slapped by a woman right now, unless you all picked that up on camera, right? In all honesty, while I won't respond to her, but I can honestly say, I don't think I get into the station when I come off the show to go report that, right? But the point is, We need to get more men aware, beginning with those in authority who can sit down, who can accept it, who can share it, and who can say, hey, okay, this is the case, and let's deal with this the same way we would deal with abuse in any other way. The other thing you talked about, the person talked about a shelter on Facebook, and my response to them was that we as men need to get started, right? Having this shelter as opposed to waiting on the government, right? We need to get started and then allow the government, we take the lead and then let the government follow through. Because if we sit back, right, and wait for the government to do it, it could take a long time. So we as men, we need to establish, this is why when I talk about uplifting men, this is my role. My role is really to seek to help, support, shelter. That's the long-term plan. I would like to set up a mental health institution as a layperson. I spoke with Dr. Sean Knowles a couple of weeks on this, right? To talk about a center, setting up a center. I spoke with Dr. Kale Felipe also from the Department of Gender and Henry Johnson, the male desk. We need to have this male help center set up in terms of where men can go, a space where men can go and talk and share about the challenges, right? And so this is one of my goals for next year, to put the center together. And then from a lay perspective, and then we could further recommend them to the professionals. But we as men, we need to have these shelters in place. We need to have these centers in place where men can reach out. Even if he does not want to go to the police, he may call me. He may be able to sit down and have a conversation with me or somebody else and say, hey, I need a support system. I can say, okay, make contact with this person, that person. So as men, we need to have a better built-in support system for each other. And I think that'll go a long way to getting it started.
Thank you. Reverend Paul, your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I think that as a development society, there are some footings that we need to continue to build on. And one of the things that we need to build on, first, I should also commend the brother David Williams for the work that he's doing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think it's amazing, and I think it's a great work that he's doing. But in relation to what he's doing, there has to be, if there's going to be change, as he would have mentioned with respect to the one going to the police and the police laughing and really, you know, discouraging them, even practically running them out of the station and the rest of that. All of these things has to do with our culture. And so hence there has to be this, to me, there has to be a barrage of education. And it has to come from different areas of society so that we can begin to build.
Absolutely. I want you to hold that thought, Rev. Don't lose it, because you're talking good. But I want to go to the break. I can't let Nahaja come back and our bills ain't paid. So we'll take a commercial break and we'll be right back after this.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
We are working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this. Together.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
had to take a break, had to keep the lights on, keep the bills paid. But thank you also very much. Again, this is the Hit Back with Nahaja Black. I'm your special guest host for today, Robin Lines, talking about part two of our series, Overcoming Abuse. My special guest in studio with me today, the incomparable Reverend Patrick Paul, the indomitable David Williams, doing such great work. Rev, when we went to the break, you were talking a little bit about this male culture and our men not coming forward and not really speaking openly about their abuse. Any words of wisdom on that issue?
If I may, Robin, there's a saying that if you want to go fast, you go by yourself. If you want to go far, you have to carry people with you. As a nation and as a people, we have to go far. We have to have something that is sustainable. So we have to help persons and people to move away from the individualism and move back to a collective concept. So in relation to really seeking to go further, seeking to sustain, there has to be programs, and the program has to start first with education. That education aspect, because like David would have mentioned, most of the persons and people that he would have talked to, they said that they were abused. In fact, a statistic says 95% of persons who were abused will eventually become an abuser if there is no intervention.
Yes.
Once a person is abused to any in any which way, they will in return do that if there is no intervention. The most simple and easy intervention is education. We need to begin as a country, as institutions, and we need to bind together. We need to work together as different entities, different groups, church groups, other civic organizations. We need to work together to better our country. And then, of course, we need laws to be able to sustain them so that we can have a place, as it were, of refuge. Back in the Old Testament, it was simple that God set up. If somebody was offended, if somebody had any kind of abuse, any kind of social interaction, and there was appeared to be a challenge, there was a city called a city of refuge where they would run, meaning that you cannot do anything with them there until the priest was able to hear them and was able to hear the others. So as a nation, we need to begin to lift ourselves up a little higher, a little more, if we're going to be able to limit, to be able to break this whole cultural aspect of who we are. And these things appears to be institutionalized. And so hence, in relation to that, I think the first thing we need to do is to begin this educational, and then we need to pull the various entities together, and we need to move to create infrastructures, and then to have those infrastructure become law. In that, we'll begin to break this whole cycle within our society.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend Paul. And I know that you have to leave us soon, but any words of wisdom, of comfort, of encouragement and strength for someone who is in an abusive relationship, needs to get out, needs to know how to overcome, how do we get past that kind of trauma just before you leave?
No matter what position or what experiences we may had, there is always a way out. The greatest challenge is most of us wants to see the way out before we take it. But I would want to encourage persons out there, if you've been in an abusive situation for any number of years or any sustained period of time, you want to make up in your mind that number one, you are precious in God's sight, and you are precious to your own family, and you are precious to society. While it may not appear to be so, there are steps that we need to take. And we have groups like David Williams. We have groups like, there are churches that are under denominational churches and of course some other churches that you can indeed find refuge. We have churches within our Christian society that put people up, but the wider society don't know that. But if they search, et cetera, they'll be able to find those places. So I want to encourage persons that if you're in any abusive situation, you can find your way out, find yourself a good counselor, and begin the process to move out of that situation. You are too precious to the Lord. You're too precious to our society. You're too precious to your family. And so may the Lord bless you, Robin, as you continue this great show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rev. And I appreciate your candidness, your honesty, you know, and really shining some light and unpacking some of these issues. We have more talk than time. We have to do this again. But I really appreciate you being with us. And so thank you so much for taking this invitation and bringing your wisdom and all of your charisma to this conversation. So thank you.
You're too nice.
We'll speak soon.
Okay. And thanks again, Robin.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for all of you that continue to stay, continue to chime in. David, thank you so much for sticking with us. We're going to get back to the conversation. I just want to share a few comments from our Facebook audience and those that are joining us via social media platform, YouTube. So Simone Duncombe says, yes, because men and boys aren't only abused by women, but by other men as well. How do we help our boys who have been abused sexually? And I'll throw that question out there to you, David. Roosevelt Wells says, a man is supposed to protect and pray for and provide for his family. All right. Then Alicia Newton gave you some compliments, Mr. Williams, saying that you're doing an awesome job. And then I hear Mimi, I think this is Jelen or Mimi Gellin. She says, it's easy getting into a relationship, but getting out of an abusive one is hell. So David, I want you to talk a little bit about that. How do we create this support system? You know, the thing is, it's very difficult to retrain the psyche of a man. We need to address our girls. We need to address our boys. Because when we're dealing with men, when we're dealing with women, it's a little more challenging. We need to make sure that our children are being raised in an understanding that I shouldn't be a perpetrator of abuse. Our children are raised in an understanding and safe spaces are created for them to speak out, to talk. And so there's so much work for us to do as a society, as a nation, because these matters are complex. They are layered. It's not simple. You can't just address one singular issue. If you don't take an holistic and aggressive approach to the topic of gender-based violence, to intimate partner violence, to child abuse, to violence in and of itself, we'll miss the mark. And oftentimes, and not to discredit the work that so many people are doing, but oftentimes we deal with symptoms and we need to get right down to the cause. Because as long as the cause remains, the symptoms will continue to resurface. It will continue to resurface. You can treat it, but it'll continue to resurface. What do you think about those programs like yours, but even from an earlier age, how do we get into the psyche of our young people when we're talking about violence and abuse?
You know, the first thing I would say is programs, there are numerous programs that are taking place. So while we can't credit Uplifting Men or Prison Fellowship or even a part of the International Men's Day Committee, because International Men's Day Committee is just a group of men coming together, forming a body with a number of men organizations under its umbrella. So things are happening. I mean, I could think of Sami, Pastor Reverend Sami Roll with the Boys Club, and you can look at Boys Brigade and Boys Scout, Pathfinders, which I was a part of, I grew up in from an Adventist perspective. So there are numerous programs that are reaching out. Right. So when people say there are no programs, there are programs. I know a number of other people. I've been a part of numerous programs in schools where we go into the schools where we've been talking to the boys and to the girls. Right. So things are happening. But in a general sense, for me, there's a three-pronged approach I would approach with anything. And there's something I think need to be in the inner city. I call it C. S, there must be a spiritual approach, because I believe that a true change and transformation has to come from a spiritual perspective, right? That's S. The other E, education. There must be an educational involvement. And the third one is E, economic empowerment, right? So let's get back to our boys. So I believe we ought to have their information ought to be shared and encourage them along the ways from a spiritual, from an educational, and from an economic empowerment. Things are happening. And so when people quick to jump on the church, I hear people, the church this happened in the church. But I always say to them, can you imagine if the church was not involved, the church wasn't active? Because you gave an example, you said there's about 1,000 churches. So if 1,000 churches out there are doing something, no matter how small it is, imagine what society would have been like if you did not have these 1,000 churches. So things are happening. We have to be positive. We have to look at positive programs. Someone asked, as I saw on Facebook, someone asked a question about the Department of Gender, and they have the funding. And I said to them, the Department of Gender and Family Affairs are doing things. That's why they had they recognized that it was called the Women's Bureau of Women's Affairs, because I was a part of that. When they hired Mr. Henry Johnson, the male desk coordinator, who reached out to men's group. He's been on numerous talk shows, asking them to contact him, be a part. And as a matter of fact, Dr. Felipe mentioned last week, we had men's week about 2 weeks ago. There's grants out there for men's organization and women's organization. So I'm saying all of this to say things are happening. We just have to reach out, right? And the necessary support system, the structure. We need, in reaching out to our boys and our men, what has to happen? We have to be mentors. Present Fellowship has a program where we've made a decision. We have a program coming up in the next 2 weeks, Angel Tree, right? We'll reach out to children whose parents are incarcerated, right? As well as children who lost their parents by murder. So we reach out to them with programs, and we do this all year. It's not a one-time thing.
And they're going to need the support because of the trauma that they've experienced. I want to add, because this has been such a meaty conversation, I want to add Alicia Newton to the conversation. I don't know if she's having technical difficulties because she was just with me. She wasn't able to come on earlier, but she was on for a few minutes, and I think she's saying that her internet is starting to act up again. But she has been a survivor of domestic abuse, and she shared some of her story with us last week, and I wanted her to come again and complete that and talk a little bit about overcoming. And so while we try to see if we can get her back into the show, I want you to continue, Mr. Williams, and talk about your suggestions, because you've done so much work dealing with, like I said, the perpetrators of domestic violence. You've seen it from that side, hands-on, looking at their experiences and trying to get to the causes, which I think is so very important. So what are the next steps? Because the question we're asking on this show is, are we doing enough? What are the next steps? What needs to be done? Where do we go from here in making this address? I see Alicia, Mr. Williams, and we're almost out of time. So let me just add her to the conversation. Alicia, thank you so very much for being part of this discussion today. I know you've been listening to Mr. Williams. I know you were listening to Reverend Paul and so much of the things that we have I've talked about. And so while Mr. Williams compiles his suggestions and final words, I want you to talk a little bit about your overcoming story. Share a little bit about what your story is, but the overcoming, because that's the gist of it. That's the strength of it. We know what's happening, and we have to be a bridge. We have to be a bridge to rescue our people. Share a little bit about your story and the overcoming.
Even after getting out of that abusive relationship, it took a while just to be me again. It took a while to live again. And it's still a process. Yes, I may have gotten out, but I had to change everything about myself. I had to change the way I thought, the way I act, things that I did. I had to put away the alcohol, get rid of that addiction because it wasn't helping. I had to seek mental help as well. I started seeing a therapist. I had to start going back to church. I had to start talking to God more. I started reading my Bible more. It's so much things that you have to do. And the sad reality of it is what I was sharing from last week was that there are not a lot of places you can go to do these things. I was fortunate enough that once I made that decision to get out, I had people who had my back, who stood by my side, people who pushed me to get the help that I needed. I had people who supported me as I went through to do the things that I had to do, who listened, who chimed in, who was my cheerleaders because I needed them. But there are a lot of people that do not have this. They're not as fortunate as me. There's so much things that needs to be changed within our society right now. And it's sickening the things that are still happening. It really is. It upsets me sometimes when I hear stories from other women, when I hear stories from men and all, when I hear stories even about little kids, it upsets me so much to know that these things are still going on and there is nothing that has changed as yet to help. One thing for sure, therapy is a must. We need to encourage people to seek therapy. I know growing up, in any terms when it came to going to a psychiatrist or seeking therapy for anything or counseling, oh, you have to be crazy. That was the stigma to it. You have to be crazy. Oh, there's nothing wrong with you. Why do you need to go to a psychiatrist? You could fix that yourself. Just deal with it. Move on. That needs to change. We need to have, that's a conversation that needs to be had. We need to make seeking therapy a norm. We need to, like, especially for men, being able to open up, that's another thing that needs to be the norm. Our society raises our boys to be hard. We tell them, oh, there's no need to show your emotions. If you cry, what's the word they like to use? Sissy? That's the word. You're a sissy. I hate that word, but that's what we tell them. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Continue.
Yes. Yeah, we tell them they're soft, you know? But we can't do that. This is damaging them from they are kids. And this is what's creating this atmosphere that we have now when these little children grows up into these adults. These little boys now become, oh, we are these hard macho men and we in charge and we can do whatever we want and we will take advantage and walk over whoever we need to walk over. They grow up with that mentality that, hey, I'm the boss and screw whoever else. They grow up with the mentality that if I could take a hit, she could take it too. All of these are conversations that needs to be had and we don't have them.
What do you think beside your own personal journey, getting the strength to walk away, what do you think were some of the challenges that existed or what do you think if you had access to sooner or more readily available would have helped you more? What are your thoughts on that?
If I had sought therapy earlier on, it would have helped me, especially for the various rapes that I went through and my molestation. If I had sought therapy, I think it would have had me in a frame of mind where I wouldn't have been in that place to be abused. I wouldn't have been that person who taught nothing of herself, that she took whatever this man did and threw at her. I also believe in being comfortable enough to open up to people, even if just family and friends. Growing up, I wasn't comfortable with that because I always felt as if I'm supposed to be the strong one. So I shouldn't be showing my emotions or anything, that I have to be the strong one for everyone. I'm the smart one out of the family, so I'm supposed to be perfect. There's nothing that was supposed to be wrong with me. And that was me growing up. So I kept all of these things bottled down inside because of the shame, fear, and not feeling comfortable to even share, talk to people about it. So if we can open up avenues, and I love what Mr. Williams is doing, I always just tell him that I love it, is the fact that he's giving especially men this opportunity to talk about things that happen, to work through their issues and not keep everything bottled inside. But that's something a conversation society as a whole needs to have. We need more institutions in place that allows persons to do these things.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you so much. We're going to, you know, allow you to give some closing words. Mr. Williams, we have to do more. We have to go further. And again, I talk about that legislative journey, that policy journey, that program journey, that the gender-based violence task force initiated in 2013. And I remind our listening audience about that, because we cannot continue to discuss what we know is happening, and that is where it ends. We can't just talk. And so you had some suggestions, and then I'm going to go to Ms. Newton for some closing words, because we just have a few more minutes and then we have to wrap up. I can't believe time went so quickly, but you had some suggestions for addressing abuse and where we can go from here. So you can go
I thought you meant Ms.
No. I mean you, Williams. I mean, you had some suggestions, yes. So you can continue with that.
Okay, right. So I was saying, as we continue to educate our boys, our young men, letting them know that it's okay to stand up for our women and our girls, is okay to not appear to be macho when we're in a space where we hear our boys and our men sharing and pulling down, saying the negative things about our women. And once we, right, as men, prepare to stand up, and this is why I'm on radio publicly, right? This is why I'm in the prison. This is why I supported Zonta and the various groups. In other words, I'm saying I don't agree with this for men doing it, right? This is why last week, like I said on the show, I had 3 women and I have another 3 on this coming Sunday. Because I am saying, as a male, I do not support the abuse. I do not support the violence against the women and the girls. And as a male, I'm prepared to stand up. And I'm saying, if we can get more men who are prepared to be bold, people will call you sissy, soft, and whatever they want to call you. But the point is, you know it's wrong, and you're prepared to stand up wherever you go, whether you're in the Bahamas, wherever you go around the world. I am prepared as a male to stand up and say, I do not support it, I do not agree with it, and there's no way. So if we can get more men who are bold enough to stand up for the against the abuse of the women, the girls, the young men, then truly that begins the step of making a difference.
Thank you so much, David. Alicia, I want you to talk to directly over these airwaves. I want you to talk to someone who may be challenged, who's in an abusive relationship, who's trying to get out. I want you to speak to him, speak to her. And give them some words of encouragement based on your healing, based on your journey.
My words of encouragement to anyone who's being abused: you are worth it. You are beautifully made by God's hand. You are perfect. You deserve the world. You deserve it all. You do not deserve anyone to treat you as a doormat that they can walk over, use, and abuse. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to be free. There is no way that you should be uncomfortable in any relationship that you are in. And I pray this every day from I got out. I pray that other men and women find the strength and the courage to walk away. Your life is worth more. Love you first. And start to treat yourself. The more you treat yourself, the more you love yourself. There's a mantra that I have that I say every morning now. And it goes, I'm somewhere in the future, and I look much better than I do right now. And I say this every morning. And this is a reminder to me that every day I must get up and strive for a better tomorrow for myself. Every day I must get up and look forward to being, discovering something new about myself. Every day I will get up and I will love myself because tomorrow is my future and it's a better day than today. Don't let yourself get sucked down into that hole. Run, get away as fast as you can. You deserve more.
Thank you. And, thank you. Sorry.
And if anyone, I've spoken to a few women already, anyone, be it a woman or man, you can reach out to me on Facebook. If you need someone to talk to, I will talk. I have no problems with it. I don't have the numbers on hand for me right now, but if you can't get me, reach out to the Crisis Center.
Absolutely.
The Crisis Center was a big help for me. Reach out to them. They have persons who man those lines 24/7 sometimes.
Awesome. And we're almost out of time. And I'm so glad you mentioned the Crisis Center because I wanted to pay kudos and just congratulate the Crisis Center, Zonta, Caribbean Women in Leadership, all, you know, Princess Court Ministries, David Williams and his program, all of those who are working so hard to help to shed some light in dark places. It's been a pleasure talking with all of you today. This has been the Hit Back without Nahaja Black. I miss her. I've been your guest host, Robin Lines. It's been a pleasure. We have more talk than we have time, but I think I'll see you again soon. So thank you, everyone, for joining us, and have a good evening.